This podcast may contain content that is not suitable for listeners under the age of 18. If you are 17 or younger and wish to educate yourself about sex and relationships, you should visit scarleteen.com. That's scarleteen with one T.
Hey, I'm Alicia, your non-monogamous relationship coach. Welcome to the podcast where my friends and I chat about our relationships, enthusiastic non-monogamy, polyamory, swinging, kink, and our lives. You'll get a candid peek into what makes it worth it to live life outside the box. And in case you're still wondering, nope, we're not monogamous. Hey, welcome to Nope, We're Not Monogamous, where we're exploring the complex and fascinating world of non-monogamy. If you are struggling with jealousy in your relationships, open, non-monogamous, swingery, however you've formed your relationship, you're in luck. Besides being your charming podcast host, I'm also a non-monogamous relationship coach who can help you find the roots of your jealousy and create more secure, pleasure-filled connections. I work with you one-on-one to tackle exactly what's happening for you and your relationships. And right now, I have 5 spots open in my calendar for new clients, and I would love to work with you. So grab the link in the show notes or find me on social media and let's chat. And stick around and maybe even consider working with me to conquer your jealousy once and for all. Today's episode is exhilarating, and I'm joined by Christina B. Dynamite. Christina is a vibrant mental wellness coach, educator, nurse, and artist who fiercely believes that being authentically yourself and chasing your passions are non-negotiable needs for a meaningful life. So in our chat today, we're talking about both of our intimate journeys through non-monogamy and polyamory, sharing our experiences, our challenges, our triumphs. And Nurse Dynamite, as she's affectionately called, is sharing a lot here about STIs with practical advice and invaluable resources, boundaries, communication, sexuality. It's a really, really fun conversation that bounces around a little bit, but you're going to find so many nuggets. I really hope you enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it.
I'm like, Zoom, why are you messing with me?
Okay. There. Hello, Christina. Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon.
It is now afternoon. Welcome to Nope, We're Not Monogamous. So I'm assuming you're not monogamous.
Very much so. Yeah. I had my last monogamous relationship in about, I think, 2015. I gave it one more go. And it was kind of redeeming in that I spent 2.5 years with this person. I got in trouble for being me all the time.
Yeah.
I learned that if I have differences with a partner, it doesn't mean the end. And I didn't cheat in my first my only monogamous relationship. I think I've never cheated. So there was a lot out of it. And I realized at the end of it, I really value the right to be nude in public if I want to.
Oh, yeah. Let me wear what's comfortable.
I had actually had thoughts of showing up to the podcast today naked because I probably could. But it's a little chilly still here in Portland.
Fair.
But as a teenager, I cheated on everybody. In the first great love of my life, I cheated on him. And I was just looking at some of those old text conversations, like AOL Instant Messenger logs. And, just some of the things I said were like, wow, yeah, I'm still me. And I'm so glad that I found poly and kink in my early 20s. Because I said stuff like, I want someone who is relatively uninhibited and kinky and open-minded, and I'm just like, I'm still me. And I found something a long time ago about like discretion and boundaries that he wrote, like as things to work on. And I'm not somebody who hides in closets very well. I have a big closet full of lots of clothes, but I discourage my cats from hiding in the closet. And so I learned about Polly and King from the same person, I think, in my early 20s. Last night I looked up when the first episode of Ethical Slut came out, and it was 1997, which sounds about right. Not that first episode, the first edition of Ethical Slut.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember at the time they had a specific chapter called Jealousy. Yeah. And that was the first time I learned that jealousy was a concept we could actually think about, not just feel.
What?
Yeah, game changer, right?
Uh-huh.
And at the time, I was cheating on him with a girl, of course. And they met each other one day, but neither of them wanted to let me date the other, which kind of sucked. And I, when I learned about Polly and Kink, it was just like, oh, there's so much in here that's me that I identify with, that I find freedom in. Like, I don't have to cheat anymore because there's this other way. I mean, granted, cheating was, and you know, due to other issues, trauma, intimacy, you know, whatever. But and throughout my 20s and 30s, I definitely found people who didn't do ethical poly. But it was transformative for me. And I wanted to like grow like wildfire. And the person I was dating at the time wanted to like be slow and cautious. And I don't do well when I want to grow at a rate faster for my partner, especially if it's something exciting and transformative like this. And in my early 20s, I had an official poly relationship with someone who didn't feel jealousy, which I can't understand, but I know that there's people who don't. And I had zero self-esteem at the time. Like, I didn't even know I was smart until I dated this person. And we, I know, I mean, I went back to school. I became a, you know, in nursing. And we would play Scrabble all the time. I was a straight A student while I was a pothead. And but I had no self-esteem. So he was dating someone else that was into horror shows and like, I don't know, all this other stuff. And I just was deathly afraid of her and him leaving me. But I had no problem. I've never had any problem doing what I wanted to do. He was totally fine with me having sex with other people. And it's interesting to look at that relationship then and my relationship with my wife now and go through poly very differently.
Yeah.
Because cognitively, I know I have a secure relationship after lots and lots of work, years of therapy, like lots of tears and growth and a period of time where the universe stopped handing people to me and I had to learn to be independent. And my wife and I, when we got together though, had different ideas of what poly looked like. She was a group sex with your partner kind of person. Mm-hmm. And also like a once every 10 years bisexual. And I'm definitely more middle of the line bisexual. And I like having parallel relationships. I would love to have both, you know, be squished between both of my partners. And I use the term partners loosely. Someone pointed out the importance of terminology to me recently, but I use the term partners loosely. Partner, girlfriend, whatever, friend with benefit. But, you know, it's not always what's going to happen. So when we got together in 2018, we got together with the understanding that we were going to have an open relationship, whatever that meant. And prior to COVID, we had only had like one group dating experience with someone who then right before COVID fell in love with someone and got shafted out during COVID. So good for them. But we never really got to test out that thing. Like, we get along really well. Like, she had two dogs and two cats. I had two dogs and two cats. Who better to understand each other? You know, we both have big hearts. We're both creative. We both let each other be who we are. And we both love to cry. We can have hard conversations. Not to say we haven't had our challenges and our intimacy growing pains. And we've definitely seen parts of ourselves that aren't our usual selves, right? That wounded child coming out saying shit that you've never heard your partner say. It's not funny, but it's
who are
like,
you?
Who are Yeah. But we have compassion for that part of us because it's not the vast majority of our conversation. So not fast forward because COVID was long. Before we got secretly married in 2019 and we survived COVID together. But then we were going to have our, we were planning to have our real wedding ceremony in 2021, but that, no, 2020, but that got postponed, obviously. And we had our, we planned our real wedding ceremony in 2021. And I started having a lot of resentment before our wedding because we don't, we do a lot of things. We have a lot of physical intimacy, but we don't have a lot of sex. And, I'm a highly sexual person, but when I'm stressed, I want sex. When she's stressed, she's just like, yeah.
Totally relatable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To which one?
Everything's wrong. Fuck me.
Yes.
Literally.
I've got this really stressful project that I need to work on, and I know I should be doing it, but I need sex first.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and she's a morning wanker, and I'm a night wanker. It's like, but anyway, so So I started feeling some resentment before the wedding because we hadn't really tested that. And then like a random ex-boyfriend started coming around like out of the blue. And it gave me kind of that lift that I needed as a flirt. And of course she's like, this has to happen now. I like to drink from the fire hose of life. I didn't ask for it. It just happened. He just showed up randomly. And, you know, we didn't have sex before. I didn't have sex with him beforehand, but just still connecting with him beforehand, at least like ease the, you know, it started the process of us having to work through stuff.
Yeah.
And we got through that and, you know, she met him at some point and had her first like partner meeting and that did not go well. I thought it would be a really good idea for them to meet at a whiskey bar because they both like whiskey. But if you ever drink with my wife, make sure she eats first. She had some hard feelings and I was happy. Not that she was having hard feelings, but that my people were meeting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so she got to go through a lot of feelings and thoughts and fears. And, you know, he only lasted in my life again, but for so long, he's kind of a comet. And what's funny is that I've been putting it out there that I want like a weekly masculine of center kind of partner. And that's not really what's happened yet. I think, you know, the universe is like, you have to work on other things like your coaching business, like not being so desperate, like doing some inner healing on self-trust and, you know, deepening some stuff with your partner and all the blah, blah, blah. All this last year's torture. It's fun torture, but
good stuff.
And so I've gotten breadcrumbs here and there. But she's the one that has kind of a semi-regular girlfriend now. And we have a boyfriend that we share who I went out on a date with first, but she liked him. And they have a great bond and, he's a pretty chill guy. And, you know, I don't, you know, it's all very loose. Again, I'm using the terms boyfriend and girlfriend loosely. But they've been good connections. And so I got to have my partner is going on a date for the first time with somebody feeling. And that's where I go back to knowing I have a secure relationship in my head, but having to feel the feels and wanting to like rationalize the feels away.
Yeah. I'm just going to think about this.
I can't, I just have to feel them. And it sucked. I'm the goose and the gander. I don't like it when anyone else has, you know, it gave us a lot of compassion for each other because now she's got some crushes on these other people and she understands my kind of poly where you can have feels for other people. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting. But the same week that she got asked out on the date by this girl, I was finally like clicking with someone on Field. And I've only ended up hooking up with this person once. And he was kind of like, he had a shadowy picture because nothing I was doing was working, right? I was like, right. I want this, this, and this. And then I picked someone who seemed like it fit that description. And then that's, of course, not what I really wanted. But we had a good connection and like something about like that. So the first week while I was going through the feels of her dating this woman, I also was flirting with this guy. who literally had a shadowy picture on Field. I'm like, fuck it. Let me just pick this picture. Let me just pick this guy. Uh-huh. Cause his description seemed safe, but, most people would be like, whoa. And he's cute. You know, we had an interesting romp our first time. But so that week I was having all these like fear feelings and sadness and crying, but also an intense amount of hormones flowing. It was a lot, but also I'm kind of glad I had that like flirtation to mitigate it. And it's funny because I'm the one that's like done a lot of poly research between the two of us and like done a lot of thinking about this for the last 20 something years. And, a friend of ours pointed out to us that that time that, something that really kind of eased the transition of that, I was giving my wife a good marriage because this is her third marriage. Yeah. And she's giving me good poly because she's a responsive partner. And I know. We have like this friend that's just a really awesome at communication and relationships and insight. And, we kind of go to her, but we both of us go to her for advice and some things. And when my wife's not listening to my advice, I send her over to this friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I should give a shout out to T. Thank you, T. and yeah, so that actually really kind of helped, you know, get us over the hump of that. But yeah, I mean, I've still had to learn how to be a meta and learn how to be around my partner being around somebody. And yeah, I can't even hate this person. Like, she's cool. Like, she reminds me a lot of me. And I'm not jealous at all of my wife with our boyfriend, which is interesting and cool. Probably also because I know that she's odds of her leaving me for a dude or a cis male are very slim.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't have any fears about it. Like, I was going away for a conference at Brighton Bush. I don't know if you've ever been. It's amazing.
I haven't been, but it's on my list.
Yeah.
It's on my list.
But I was like, hey, I'm going out of town if you'd like to fuck my wife. And he was like, okay. And she ended up having a pretty transformative experience with a guy that weekend. And it was her birthday weekend. So it was really cool. But I got out of the woods. I got a cute picture of them like kissing. And
yeah,
I was slightly upset I didn't get naughtier pictures. But it is what it is. And yeah, we just taught our first workshop together. I started teaching workshops in the fall. The first one on prioritizing pleasure, the second one on boundaries.
Yeah.
And then the last one we just did on this Sunday on jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was another learning process for us about how to work together. And we love sharing our experiences, but it was great. And her girlfriend was there and her girlfriend's girlfriend was there. And then we had lunch with her meta and so it's like all these little baby steps of poly growth in my 40s when I started this journey 20 something years ago.
Yeah.
And she's been listening to your podcast a lot, like soaking in all this information, which is great.
I'm hearing that.
Yeah. So you're contributing to my relationship.
You're welcome.
And thank you. Last night we got a notification that one of our partners had tested positive for gonorrhea in the throat. And so we did all the partner notification in a non-stigmatizing manner and try to figure out resources. I'll go get tested after this. And I want to throw in a plug here for if your doctor or provider is not testing in your throat and you are doing oral sex, you should advocate for it. Mm-hmm. I will actually say Kaiser is doing me right this time because I did an e-visit last night to request the tests and throat and rectal testing was an option, which kind of surprised me. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is the thing people don't know. If you're anywhere that you're having sex, you should probably get tested there.
Yes. And up to 30% of cases of gonorrhea, I saw the statistic recently, can be missed if you don't do throat or rectal testing, if you're having rectal sex. Yeah. And gonorrhea can be transmitted through kissing, which I just realized. I just learned that today.
I had no idea.
Yes. Yeah. I'll just pause there for us to process that.
In my mind, I was like, deep throating. That's how you get it in your throat. Deep throating.
Yeah. I mean, if you paid attention to STI science at all lately, and I don't have like all the details. I really want to nerd out on that more, but there's a lot of people already doing that. Yeah. But if you pay attention to the science, like a lot of people still don't know about herpes, right?
Right.
Yeah. And that type one is no longer just oral, and type two is no longer just genital because of us sluts. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't want to only blame the good sluts. I also want to, you know, I don't want to blame. It's not blame. It's just, it's a thing. It's just,
what's, around, it's just the evolution. It's biological evolution.
Yep. But I did learn that if you have type one, which is what we call the grandma herpes, where you get it from maybe sharing a straw or kissing your grandma, right? It might actually provide some protection against type two.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool, but you know,
do you know Evelyn Dacher? Mm-mm. She's in Portland as well. She's in Oregon as well. But she is an MD who, she does the STARS talk, the sexual safety talk. And she just wrote a book, a gender neutral STI book that has, it's so in depth and so much good information. And I don't remember the name of it, but I think everybody should have it, especially in the medical field.
Yeah. 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 Thank you.
Yeah.
What was her name? I'm going to look that
Evelyn
up.
Evelyn right Dacher. Now. Yeah, Evelyn Dacher. Her website's maketimeforthetalk.com.
We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Alicia here. You know, the voice you've been tuning into episode after episode. Today, I'm popping in with an invitation that's really close to my heart. Behind the scenes, I've been crafting something special just for you, my dedicated listeners. If there's a voice inside you that's seeking guidance on navigating the realms of relationships and non-monogamy, wanting to like boost your confidence and find that unwavering sense of security, or you're struggling to manage the tricky waters of jealousy, I'm here to offer my support. I've cleared my schedule to open up 50 slots this month for free one-on-one clarity chats directly with me. So this is your opportunity to dive deep into those pressing questions and come out on the other side with newfound clarity and direction. The availability on this is super limited and these spots are going to fill up really fast. So don't miss your chance to connect with me. Head over to my website, aliciapayne.com right now. Go secure your spot, because together we can uncover a path to a more joyful, fulfilling, and easy non-monogamous journey. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard of the STARS talk. It is very useful as a framework.
Yeah.
Okay, I got that written down. as a framework for having the conversations, because usually the conversation goes, have you been tested? Yep. Okay, great. Me too. Clean? Yep. No, yes, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's, it's more complicated than that, because
so much more
most providers don't regularly test for HSV unless you ask for it, unless you have risk. And yeah, the throat swab. So,
yeah,
because the person who told us was negative in their genitals and positive in their throat. And it was caught through a routine screen, no symptoms.
Wow.
The every 6 month screen.
Yeah. Test those orifices. Or test your holes, people. Test your holes.
And advocate for testing all of your holes. And I do hope that throat swabs become more regular.
Yeah.
Throughout, like, you know, I don't even think they're officially part of CDC guidelines yet.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So today we're, you know, notifying other partners and talking about what that means for us in our weekend, and going back to, so I'm circling full back, and then it's just it's strengthening us in our poly communication and for whatever happens, in that, okay, it's another thing. It's, and you know, STIs happen in monogamous relationships. It does.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and people assume it doesn't, but it's just a talk. It's just like, oh, I gave you the flu, or and we have a lot more experience talking
COVID.
About infection risk with COVID. So if we could normalize and like destigmatize those conversations, it would be very helpful for preventing the spread. So,
Yeah. Whenever I'm teaching about STIs and sexual safety, like I try to remember to remind people that you are at risk if you're having sex, period. The only way you're not at risk for STIs is if you do not have sex. Like, that's it.
Although I think there are rare transmission cases of trichomoniasis on toilets or towels, very rare. And there is a strain of gonorrhea that can be transmitted in soil.
I can't.
Or chlamydia. I forget which one it is.
What about my plants? Oh, come on.
Well, and also, okay, since we've transitioned into this topic of STIs, like, we have to remember sex is a very big word. It's not, a lot of people think of sex as just PIV, penis and vagina, or whatever, right? Genital to genital touching. Mm-hmm. But one of my pet peeves, especially as a nurse, is just like people not paying attention to microbes and like how easy it is to travel. So it's like, I'm going to finger you and then I'm going to touch my genitals without cleansing my hands first. But if you think about it, if I touch you, what's on my hand?
Yep.
So, I mean, I guess at least, I don't know, clean your hand off with your mouth or soap and water before touching your own genitals. I'm just trying to be practical and like make it sexy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get real hot here. No, that's a real thing though, right? Like wash your hands, wash your face. If you're
have a baby wipe,
have something. Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, you change condoms but then you do that again. And then you put that on you put the hand that was on the orifice on your dick to like, or whatever other genital to keep condoms. Okay. We're talking about condoms. You put your hand that was in the orifice on your dick to like keep it hard while you're getting the other condom ready. But then you're taking this thing, these cooties that were on this hypothetical cooties,
right,
from this other person and putting it on your genitals and then sealing it in with a condom. And then you tell your partner, yeah, I was safe.
Yep.
No.
Yep.
No. Mm-hmm. No. So it's more than just, you know, I just wanted to be, you know, put out a reminder that sex is a pretty broad word.
Yeah.
And safe sex is pretty broad as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It
okay. That's
really is. All right, cool. there's our sexual safety education moment. Okay, tell me this. What has been the biggest challenge for you and your wife in being non-monogamous?
Honestly, like I don't want to say that the feels or the communication has been the biggest challenge.
Yeah.
Because we're very open with each other and we trust each other and we know that we can talk about hard things.
Yeah.
I think I'm never a fan of like, I can't ever answer the question. What's the one thing or what's the, you know, your favorite thing. So it's like a couple of hard things where I'm a New Yorker and my wife's a Californian. So getting her to communicate to other people sometimes, like what she wants and what she needs and what she's feeling, and getting her to like encouraging her to get over that hump and just say it.
Yeah.
You know, that's where tea comes in handy. Cause if she's not taking my words, then she'll listen. Then I'll be like, tea, help us. and tea will encourage her. Like poly community is like invaluable, for not processing everything together. But when either of us is overwhelmed, we're like, I can't do this right now. And we understand that. So there's that, there's the communication piece. But one of the hardest things for me was I'm really spoiled.
Mm.
And this was also something I saw in my notes with my 19 or 20 year old boyfriend. I said, I don't want to not be spoiled. I'm selfish. And when she started, there was this one week where she had a pet sitter meetup. She just started pole dancing and I just started trapeze in our late 40s.
Nice.
My inner child and my body are fighting about this.
Yeah.
So she had a pet sitters meetup. She had, I think, pole dancing. She had a date with our boyfriend. I think she even had a date with her girlfriend on Thursday. And then she had band practice on Friday. And I'm like, but she didn't think about this all in advance. It just all added up. And I'm like, when are we going to spend time together? And then, like, you know, we processed that and talked about it. And I realized that the hardest thing for me was partially that she wasn't going to be home when I got home from the day job. I mean, yes and no. Like, I'm happy that she has a life and that we're doing things because I want to have a life and do things too. Again, selfish. I want other for other people because I want her happy, but also because I like doing them too. This kind of helps me with my poly jealousy a lot, is knowing what I want and just, yeah. And having,
yes, you can have that too.
But at some point I realized one of my biggest issues was that I would have to figure out what to eat for dinner. Because she gets home earlier and she usually cooks dinner. And we do, like, you know, a meal delivery service for, not a meal, like a meal prep, not meal prep, a meal kit thing. So at least a few nights a week, we know what we're going to eat and a box of food. And she usually, like, cooks more because she's home earlier. And I'm not good at thinking about what to eat for dinner. And there's a lot of, there's some codependence there, but there's also, like, the overall theme is changing of patterns in our relationship.
Yeah.
And the jealousy workbook was helpful for this because one night I sat there and I skimmed and I'm just like, oh, okay. Yeah. That's kind of, that's like a downside of poly is like your patterns change. Your relationship is going to change, which is healthy, right? Relationships shouldn't be the same from the day you got together until the day you die, whatever.
That's how you get stagnant relationships.
Yeah.
And we just want them to stay exactly the same and stay exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But no, I had to kind of grieve the change. And I remember hearing that concept, and that's kind of been a thing I've been working on this month with even myself, like grieving that I'm not the same shit show I was, like with time management or relationships or whatever, you know, X amount of years ago.
Yeah.
And just, you know, having to accept that. And actually, once I understood that, like I was reaching out to people, I even reached out to like one of my, I don't know what to call them, but somebody I date occasionally, like to their partner, to, I wanted to ask like, well, what was it like when your partner started dating after not dating regularly? But once I identified what I was feeling and what the change was, it kind of started to dissolve it. So just kind of learning what I'm feeling and, you know, looking out for these resources and like other people to identify it. But yeah, I don't know. That's, it's kind of sad and it's kind of not, you know, lately I've been really, we've been busy and I've been kind of missing the days of COVID where we just sat around doing nothing and like cuddled all the time. But I'll tell you, we still didn't have a lot of sex during COVID because I took a management job and because we nest.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, we had a lot, again, a lot of physical intimacy, like in cuddles, but it's interesting how you could still spend so much time together and relationships can be, can stagnate.
Yeah. 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 So, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, actually, is this like one of the things that makes relationships so exciting is like the wanting, right? Like missing someone and desiring them and wanting, I want to do this, but more. But then when you get that, you don't, the feeling of wanting isn't there because you have it, right? So like you have to find the balance where you get the push and pull of like, I want it, I want more of it. Well, now I'm getting the thing I want, but then I have to step back because otherwise what else do I want? I already have it.
Right. Yeah. And that's funny too, because, you know, we had this like recurring time on our calendar, like every Saturday it would pop up a reminder, you know, wife connection time. And most of the time we didn't get to do it. But once she started having fun with other people, and I was encouraging her to have fun with other people to like build her relationships and stuff. I was like, wait a minute, I want to have fun with you too. And not that we don't have fun, like we laugh a lot, but I wanted like an actual date night with my partner. And I'm like, we just need to go play mini golf. And like, I was really feeling shitty. And like, you know, even though I knew I had my wife, I knew, you know, our relationship was secure. I knew she loved me. I knew. And again, I also want to caveat this with like, we can't predict the future. We don't know how relationships are going to change. Security is an illusion. Monogamy in marriage is an illusion of security. So with that, I know that my wife is coming home to me, you know, I can trust this, right? Because we have to trust something in the moment. But we went and we played mini golf for like 2 hours and I felt better. So just looking for like, what's the problem and what's the antidote?
Yeah,
I think, or not that it's all about problem solving. Sometimes the problem is you just need to feel the feelings. And when you feel the feelings, it gets better.
Yeah. Recognize the feelings, name the feelings, accept them, move through them, and then see if there's, if they're telling you that there's actually something wrong.
Yeah. In the jealousy class we just taught, what I came up with was sort of a very simple three-step formula for managing jealousy. One, check yourself, which is really huge, right?
Yeah.
Have your freak out first. Uh-huh. And you know, when you're done having your freak out, make sure you're not still freaking out because you're not thinking logically. Talk to people, find out more about what's going on, and then try to figure out why you're jealous.
Yeah.
All that is not tiny. And then two, talk to your person, and listen to your person. A friend reminded me last night that talking is only part of it. You also have to listen. Yeah. And then three, like do the work afterwards, like to review that situation, learn more about what you just went through, learn more about what you might go through, build your relationships deeper and closer and more intimate. And yeah, so we've been doing a lot of that in that easy three-step process.
Yeah. Check yourself. There is a lot of me to check. This might take a while.
Yeah, but I have seen like from the beginning of her starting to date other people and now I'm more comfortable with it. I knew philosophically and from some experiences before that it was really hard for me at first, but once I had more information, it got easier. And it's also really just good to see I'm not the same person I was 20 years ago in that poly relationship where I had no sense of security and safety in myself. And it was extra good to see last night when I was looking through these old text messages with, you know, from like 19, 20 years old, 21 years old, that I am definitely not as crappy as I was as a communicator back then. I knew what I wanted, but I didn't have, I definitely grew a lot in that since then.
Yeah.
And I could sit harder with hard conversations.
Having those experiences and getting more comfortable. You know, I love your jealousy process there. I love that it's figure out why is at the end, because I feel like that's what most people do is they try to figure out why first. And then they try to rationalize and like, okay, now I know why. So you need to change these things or I need to change these things. And they're still sitting in all these like big feelings that are like you're running around like a toddler throwing a fit and you're going, but why?
You can do that, but you got to burn off the energy, right? Like exercise or journal or
do zoomies.
Actually, one of the things that my wife came up with under that section is like treat yourself like a toddler. Am I hungry? And do I need to get the zoomies like you just said? Do I need to like bang it out to heavy metal? Whatever, you know, like what? Or I know I saw some people talking about just exercise for 20 minutes, even just in couples having a fight.
Have you slept?
Yeah. Because I know I am not the same person when I am tired and hungry.
Nope.
Sometimes I'm sillier. And sometimes I'm just like, ooh, no, I'm a big baby.
My feelings get so big. And then I like take a nap and eat some food. And I'm like, what was I upset about? This is not a big deal.
Yeah. That's interesting. That, I guess that is what people do. Or I'm like, do I do that? You know, try to figure out the why first. Probably. Like I love feelings. I've been working in mental health for a long time and I can hold space for feelings, but I always kind of knee jerk want to solve problems.
Yeah.
Cause I'm good at it.
It's uncomfortable. The feelings are uncomfortable and I want to do anything. Your brain is like, I want to be comfortable quickly. What will make me not be uncomfortable?
And I think also I fall into that trap as a coach sometimes where people want you to solve the problem for them. And I'm all for, I love giving unsolicited advice or solicited advice, right?
Yeah.
And I have to definitely remember to take a step back and check myself and just let people simmer in the problem solving process because that lets them build skills. And then of course the interventions are more meaningful for them.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah, it's like I can't solve my problem. I know very well I can't solve my partner's relationship problems. It was kind of fun at first, but I had to take a step back because it's fun until it's not, because I'm dealing with my own stuff that I, you know, and my own processing and my own life stuff I have to work on.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was kind of fun at first, and it's fun sometimes until it's not. And then I kind of set a boundary on it because I can't. Yeah. Sometimes I can't. And when it's not fun, that tends to be like a signal to me that I need to take a step back from, or when it's not easy, when I start feeling resistance in my body or mind to like helping someone through a problem or supporting them through a problem, that's when I know that I need to take a step back.
Yeah.
And not, it's totally. Because I'm not going to be helpful at that point too. It's not that I don't care. I'm trying to rationalize this to myself right now, but it's true. It's true.
Listen, I'm just tired of listening to your problems. So I'm over it now. This isn't fun anymore.
And it's more like, I need a break. Go talk to someone else. I'm obviously not getting through to you. I'm glad I was. And they're usually grateful you were able to support them at all. Right.
Yeah.
But
sometimes people just want to be heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I work through it.
Yep.
I think. Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of times.
I'm curious. Do you guys ever get any like inappropriate or awkward or intrusive like questions or comments about your relationship?
We mostly socialize currently in poly circles. So that cuts it down a lot.
Yeah.
Like she's more careful about sharing it with other people, like family, and she shares some of it on social media, but, and it's not that she's in the closet. She's just a little more cautious. I know when I was, you know, younger, I got a lot of, I had a girlfriend break up with me once because I asked her on behalf of a guy I was dating if we could have a threesome. I've learned that doesn't go over very well. So I do that very carefully now. But not too much. Because yeah, like we had dinner with a friend last night, like they're in a monogamous relationship, but they have poly history. So they know, like, it's nice to be able to talk to your kind of people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably one of the most important things for people who are, you know, like transitioning from monogamy to non-monogamy, is to like find community, because it can feel really, really isolating and really like nobody else is doing this. But then when you find other people, when you find community of people who are living similar lives, it's like, oh, I'm not weird too much.
I'm the right kind,
you know,
of
like this isn't this like outlandish thing, and I'm the only person in the world doing it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's totally. That's how also things are different than 20 years ago. Because, you know, Ethical Slut was one of the first books of its kind.
Yeah.
And we haven't finished listening to Polly Secure as an audiobook, but that's been interesting. And I think that author was talking about just how, yeah, when not when people first started poly. Poly's probably been around for a really long time, or ethical non-monogamy in its many forms.
Sure.
But there wasn't the internet, there wasn't guidebook, there wasn't obvious community.
Yeah.
And now we have munches and speed dating and, you know, Facebook groups, and yeah, it's a game changer, because we can Google something really quick if we're having a problem and get worksheets and solutions. Yeah. And I love the jealousy workbook. Like, we couldn't pick just one worksheet to pull out of it for the workshop. We didn't even end up using any, just, we got a lot of information from it, but it's just, all of it is good.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
There are so many tools, polytherapists, you know, before we got married, she wanted to make sure we were sane, because we clicked really quickly, and we got us a polytherapist. And yeah. He was the one that gave us the advice of scheduling time for sex, just for sex. And actually, that was going to be my like sex tip. We were thinking about that last night. I'm like, oh shit, what is my favorite sex tip? But it's just, oh yeah, schedule time, and then make sure you kick the dogs out of your bed.
Oh yeah. Yeah, dogs aren't sexy.
They're cock blockers.
Yeah.
In all the forms.
Yeah. They're like, hey, pet me too.
Yeah.
Or they're making weird noises or whatever.
Yeah. And that's where you need music. But yeah, no, but yeah, that he pointed out to us just like some of the pitfalls we might fall into, but validated that we're sane and we have good communication, sane-ish, you know. And we got some good tips from that. And it sounds like there's a lot of people who really, even when their relationships are failing, all kinds of relationships, they still don't want to talk to someone. They still don't want to like try therapy. And
yeah, we have a lot of stigma against talking about what's happening inside of the home or inside of relationships, right? Like you don't share that. You keep that to yourself. You don't get advice. You just muscle through.
Yeah. But not only in relationships, just in our own heads.
Yeah.
And recently, like just from, you know, people going through stuff with themselves, you know, because with coaching, it's like, okay, are you able to take the steps forward? Or do you possibly also need some support to like dig through the past and parcel that out and, you know, talk with the therapist? And I feel like therapists get a bad rap. They're like, all they ever ask me is, how do you feel? And it didn't work. Well, yeah, but for people that are against therapy that are just about the how do you feel issues, I just got myself a somatic therapist. Even though I talk myself out of problem solving, like, you know, my first therapist in Portland was an ADHD therapist. So it was great. I literally just talked for 45 minutes. And most of the time I solved my own problems. Right. And once in a while, she would ask me for advice or encourage me to feel something more. But I thought that was great. But now in the last year, despite all these adventures and personal growth, I realized I'm not feeling joy fully in my body. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm not happy or not feeling joy at all, but I wanted to get to understand that more. So when I want to blah, 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 because I could talk, right? she's like, just do this and this. And like, let me know how that feels or how's your body feeling right now? And I'm like, eh. I'm like,
yeah, connecting, like dropping down into your body and connecting to what's like the messages that are there that are available instead of trying to like logic through everything.
Yeah, or kink through everything. Like I'm a pretty heavy masochist, and in my early 20s, that was the only way I could really purge the pit of my gut, and then bounce back laughing like 5 minutes later. But you know, it's you don't always want to take heavy pain, and sometimes you don't need to, and we need to learn more subtle ways to be in our body. And so, and also, I had somebody else that I was talking to recently who didn't want to have the how do you feel kind of therapist, right?
Yeah.
And I referred her, I found someone that could help her that does EMDR. Yeah. And I checked back in with her recently and she was like, oh my God, this is great. This is exactly what I wanted. And I'm like, cool. Yeah. So there's so many, or try kink. Or try, you know, try something to like help you with a frame, you know, with support, with somebody who knows what
they're painting.
Doing.
Do something
To get unstuck from hard feelings,
absolutely,
but something therapeutic with someone that can help you facilitate the process of exploring what you're going through. That was my plug for therapy. I've gotten a few like
I love it
nursey plugs in here.
It's good. I think everyone should definitely have support in one form or another. Because you can't figure it all out on your own.
Unfortunately,
you just can't.
I've tried. I've done well. I've journaled and I've talked myself out of whatever I thought the issue was, which pisses me off, mind you. I don't know if you've ever done that, where you prove yourself wrong in journaling.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Totally.
Makes me so mad.
Yeah.
But yeah, just it's engage in some process of healing and definitely talk it over with some other people. Because they help you deepen and become more awesome.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Tell me this. If you have something, what is one thing that anybody can do for free that will help them approach relationships in a healthier way?
Get a communication tool. And maybe talk to a friend using that communication tool to try to talk about something hard in your relationship, whether it's something you want or need. And I understand there's lots of barriers to communicating. But I feel like when you have a tool and then you rehearse using it with someone safe, and hopefully your partner is safe, right? If your partner's not safe and if they're not receptive to any of your needs or wants, that's not a relationship you should, that's probably not a relationship you should be in. But if it's just like your own fears, and not that your partner's not open to things you've tried in the past, like, get a tool. If you're not sure how to say it, get a tool, write down your wants and needs, and practice communicating it with someone safe, and then share it with them. Try it, you know?
Yeah.
But don't say we have to talk, right? Because that's always scary.
Yeah, that person puts people on the defensive immediately.
Yeah, the person that notified us about the STI test said something beautiful. It's like, I have something important to tell you. Mm-hmm. Or I have something important to talk about, something like that. I'm like, I really like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't automatically make you go,
what's wrong? Like
we have to talk instantly. It puts shock in my body, right?
Yeah.
That's the worst statement in the history of humankind. Yeah, but a tool. What was the tool that, oh gosh, my wife showed me a tool last night. It's an acronym and I'm totally blanking on it. But yeah, like the STARS talk, right? Like just as an example.
Yeah.
And we can use that as an example because the STI talks are some of the hardest because there's so much, even if we've overcome our shame about sexuality, we're still shameful about talking about disease.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I love about the STARS talk is it's also a great framework for just having relationship talks, regardless of like the sexuality piece. So, you know, you're talking about like your status, but you're also talking about like your turn-ons and your avoids and your boundaries and your desires and, you know, what potential relationship, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, the potential outcome of relationships that you're looking for. Like there's so many pieces there that you can use for any kind of conversation and relationship, really.
Yeah.
This is how I want our friendship to look. This is what I'm available for.
Yeah, we can totally negotiate. And that's, I guess, you know, another one of my kind of platforms is to negotiate what you want out of life.
Yeah.
You know, we make a lot of time. And I know that like even looking at this conversation from 20 years ago, and then also 20, more than 20 years ago, 25 years ago. Geez. I'm grateful I'm not in my 20s anymore, but I sure miss it sometimes.
Right.
Is that like, I think then more so, but even still now, even though I'm an open communicator, I like to think I still think people can read my mind and know what I want. Mm-hmm. But, and I've also had people explicitly tell me, I wish my partner would just do the dishes. They know that I'm stressed out. They know that, you know, I've told them before that it's something that I wish they would do, but negotiate it, like let them know when and how and why it's important to you and not just expect them to assume all that. Yeah. And it could be a game changer, just having simple negotiations like that for your relationship needs and then renegotiating when things come up constantly. Or when it doesn't work.
Yeah. Constantly evolving and changing and growing and
communicating,
reassessing. Yeah.
And letting people know your wants and needs. But I like the idea of the STARS being used for other stuff too. Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah. That's true.
Heck yeah. Yeah. What kind of music do you listen to on your way to a first date?
Actually, if I'm driving to a first, I spend a lot of time not listening to music. Sometimes I can sit in quiet. If I'm working, that's when my ADHD brain wants music.
Yeah.
But I actually had a date with someone who came over my house and at the end was like, I'm surprised you didn't put on music at all this whole time. I'm used to having music on. And I'm like, you should have said something. I don't mind being in quiet sometimes.
I do that in the car a lot. Like I'll just drive in silence and people think it's weird. And I'm like, that's what I'm just thinking. Of course, then I might miss my exit, but.
Yeah. I can't navigate and have a serious conversation at the same time. Mm-hmm. I used to be able to ride my bicycle and have bawling, crying sessions sometimes, like if I was commuting home from work, because I used to work in inpatient mental health and that's really stressful. Yeah. And so like I would cry on the way home sometimes. I mean, I would cry at work too, but right. You know, I cry, I bounce back, I laugh, you know, I cry. But yeah, no, or lately, I guess I've been listening to podcasts more. I've been listening to the podcast of my mentors, the Successful Nurse Coaches, because it talks a lot about building a coaching practice specifically for nurses who are coaches.
Yeah,
because I definitely think we're a special breed. Not that we're elite or anything, but we have a lot of cultural things as nurses that set us apart from other coaches in terms of mindset and fears and what we expect versus like the entrepreneur journey. And also like what our training is, right? The talk that she gave us was Radar. Review what happened in your lives, agree on the agenda, discuss, go through the agenda together, come up with, write down tangible, achievable action points, and then reconnect and congratulate yourselves by making it through. So we got the Radar talk as another, and that's Multiamory.
Yeah, that's from the Multiamory podcast.
Yeah. So that was a cool communication tools. We got two of them now.
Yeah.
Or a worksheet. The Jealousy Workbook has worksheets. You can always Google worksheets for any topic, pretty much. What was the original question?
How can people find you?
I am on Facebook, the Nurse Dynamite PDX page, where I have a group that I just started, You Are Dynamite, to just start putting out some like positive stuff. And I do have a website, nursedynamite.com.
I love that name.
Yeah, Google Nurse Dynamite. I'm out there.
Yeah, cool.
Not just
I'll put all the links in the show notes too if people need to like click through to something.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. This has been amazing.
Yeah, it's been a great conversation. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening today. It would mean the world to me personally and would help us keep this little podcast going if you would subscribe, leave a review, or share this episode with your friends. For more personalized support with your own relationships, we can work together on a one-to-one basis. Just visit my website at aliciapayne.com and schedule a free call to chat about life, the universe, and your relationships. Bye.